You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, good morning, good morning, good morning. 573-4BREAD-4, our telephone number. You can text or call. DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can get a hold of us. And who are you getting a hold of? Me, Dr. Michelle, on Dr. Michelle Live. We're walking together on this journey, on this this road of life that is replete with surprise turns and big potholes and beautiful landscapes. And you know, our lives just continue on and on. And sometimes we don't see the things that are going on around us. There are two things that are striking me today. I mean, I have to take a little rant aside because I know I've told you this all before about how I don't even know what, 7 years ago, 8 years, I don't know when Pandora started, when I was like freaked out about Pandora. And only as a symbol. And there's a reason I was freaked out about it, because I'm thinking it's taking away discovery. We think it's awesome because we have some obscure musician or some very popular musician that we love. And if we like that song, then we get fed more of the same thing we like. And I know you've heard me rant about this before, but I don't think that we are grasping, because I can't get it to formulate in my mind enough to speak to you and engage in a conversation. But I'd love to engage in a conversation to see what your thoughts are on this, because people that I love and respect are saying things like, you know, really, you're kind of sounding a little weird here. And I love these things. And I have to say, I love them too. I mean, I have to say that Spotify, I like Spotify. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Pandora, Spotify, then basically they're websites that you can subscribe to, and it's music, constant music, but you can also then, it starts to feed you. You can say, gee, I like, if you like one thing, then all of a sudden you have some more of the same, or you have something in the same genre. They might throw something odd at you, a little red herring, so that you then might, oh, I like that. Look at that over there. Hey, another shiny bauble. Then they'll start feeding you that. Now, who does this? And why is it not the best thing for you? Well, if you're of a certain age, it's not good for you anyway. But if you're a child, you're going to be able to be completely fed what it is you like musically, what it is you like fashion-wise, what it is you like politically, what it is you like scientifically, anything you like anytime. We'll wipe out all history, we'll wipe out whatever, because we'll just keep feeding you so that your brain then develops toward a like. We all know that happens. Why, if we today saw a woman standing at a bus stop with a corset and a bustle and a 18-inch waist in a long bustle dress with a big, big ruffled thing coming out from her rear end, with lace and a high neck, and her hair up in one of those little bun things that we equate now with too many Mormon wives or whatever, and a little parasol, why would we not go, wow, what an awesome woman. I can't wait to go off to the Gap and get that. Because it made all women jealous and was the heartthrob of all men during a period of time. You dress up in your finest bustle and your finest this and your finest that, and you rip that corset on, and the man has his own equivalent. And there were a lot of women who had a lot of malformed organs in their bodies, truthfully, because of that corset, but that was how our minds are meant, are made to do that. We're very plastic meaning malleable. Now, I'm not going to talk about this today a lot, but I happened to see an article this morning as I'm looking, researching what I wanted to talk about. And I just thought, I can't stop. I can't not do this. I have to go there. And I did it, and I had no self-discipline. And we're going to talk a little bit about self-discipline, a bit, some of the ways to counteract these things, because can they be counteracted? Well, some of them, if there's an avalanche, sometimes you got to just step out of the way. And you have to say no. You just have to say no, because you can't control it. It's like you can say all day long how if I put this toaster in a puddle of water, or I put this fan in a puddle of water and I go and touch it, I could get electrocuted. But if I really just have enough willpower, I can take my finger away from that. You can't. That's what happens in those kinds of situations. That's what happened to Thomas Merton. You think Thomas Merton in Thailand, the great Thomas Merton came out from a shower and he... I think he was in Thailand. I'm not sure. Someone can correct me if you know, but he was somewhere. This awesome spiritual man came out of the shower, hot, muggy, wherever he was. There was a fan on the floor. And like a lot of places, if you've ever been, I've been to a hotel in Mexico where there's not really any barriers between your shower and the floor. It's just the way it is. And I think he was in one single little room, and I don't know what the shower was, but he came out, he was dripping wet. There was a puddle of water by the fan, and he stepped in the water. He got electrocuted. He died. Now, why am I telling you this? I don't mean to be a downer, because we're going to talk about good things today. We really are. But I want to give you the idea that no matter how, if you had 1 second to be able to think, all I have to do is step out of this water and I'll stop being electrocuted. All I have to do is get my hand off that live wire and I will stop being electrocuted. You can't, because you are a physical being. That's it. No more than if you start eroding away, or you blast a hole in a dam that's been holding up a bunch of water, are you going to be able to stop that water flow? Very easily, anyway, unless it's planned out. So your mind, I don't know how to drill it in any further. In my mind, all of our minds, we're not just impressionable. We're very controllable. And we're very electronically controllable. Completely. That is known, it is used, it has been known for as long as people control other people. And you cannot give me a time when that isn't the case. Now, we can look back in history and say, well, when they carved it on a stone at the Wailing Wall or wherever it is, and I don't mean to make fun of that. I know that that's a very special sacred place. But, you know, something that's just carved somewhere on a hieroglyph somewhere, or hieroglyphics on some kind of monolith, it could instill terror. It could instill love. It could instill devotion to a god. It could instill taking care of a family, or being okay with having your children out on a rock to just wait for a stranger to come, which they used to do sometimes in ancient Greece when they didn't or couldn't or didn't want to handle their children. They would put them on a rock and somebody would say, oh, there's a child on a rock, I'll take them home. And they could either make them a slave or they could bring them in as one of their own. So we have so many things in history that would just blow your mind. And every time, and that's almost an undiscoverable landmine of how in history things occurred. But the reality is that was just as all-encompassing then to the mind, and where the collective mind was then, the brain was developed, but there was nothing, this was as good as it got. It's like before they found fire, as good as it got was standing out in the sun and hoping a warm rock might, or huddling all together. Once they found fire, it was antiquated. You didn't need to do that anymore. We can have a fire and all kind of be at different spaces. Then we spread out from there. So as we discover things, we think that this is new. It's not new. It's just different. And we are equipped just as other people have been equipped throughout history. We're equipped with the ability to adapt and to learn and to resist and to find antidotes. We have more diseases now than ever that have been described. I mean, really, every day there's something new. Now there's a new superbug somewhere in Nevada. It just never ends, because the deeper we look, the more we see. But we come up with stuff to fight them. And there are things we can't. But can you imagine? But people learned to cope and people did survive. There are things, and one reason penicillin saved the world in a way, not really, but penicillin. Look, when penicillin was the only drug in like the 1950s, it was like, you know, they had other little drugs, but there's only just a few things. That was like the first antibiotic. And it was the miracle, but people did survive. People found out how to survive. People used the earth to survive before that. They think that now we just have, what did we just have yesterday? The news that the moon is over a billion something years old, and the moon was a spinoff of the earth. So who knows how old this earth really is? So when we come back from the break, I want to tell you this little aside about algorithms from a scientific website talking about what algorithms, just algorithm. If you don't know what an algorithm is, I'll tell you, but how that makes up our world. And that's what Spotify is about. That's what Pandora, I was going to say Panera, is about. That's what Google's about. That's what so much is about. How do we balance that when we are 100% now plugged in? Well, we're going to talk about that, because there is a way. On the other side of the break, I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on a ranting walk. We're going on chasing little rabbits down little rabbit holes just for a moment, and then we're going to get back to a little bit more of the ethereal. We're going to look just a little bit more at what it means to surrender to win, what it means to surrender to live, what it means to surrender to your powerlessness and to God, but that in actuality gives you power. So, because that's what it's going to be about. That's what it is about. We need to believe that we have the power, that we have power, but it's the power. It's that light saw. It's that fan. It's Thomas Merton's spiritual fan, basically. And I don't mean to make light of the poor man's death, but it is what it is. But it's that same thing, but we have it with God, where we can't take our hand away, where we're plugged into Him, we're plugged into God, in the enormous power source. We make Him trite oftentimes. We make Him either rote, routine, oh God, da 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 da. And I say that not sarcastically, because I do that all the time. And sometimes I find myself saying the things that aren't even applicable anymore. Like I prayed so long for certain particular things about my mother. And she died like several years ago. And sometimes when I'm saying this particular novena, I add her in there, but not about her soul, just about, you know, and that she does XYZ, or that this happens. So we get to where we are just little machines that just, we get these little circuits and they keep on going. But that's okay, because we're more than that. We're that and. We're more than that. We have enormous capacity to, for boundless, boundaryless, wall-less love, energy, experience, change. Our brain can change, but an algorithmic world does not want your brain to change. It only wants it to change in the way it needs it to change. And an algorithmic isn't, at some point, it's like, it's the equivalent of a Johnny Appleseed. Because somebody has to create it. A human has to create it. But then it takes on a life of its own. It can go on forever until something's tweaked or changed. And I don't get it. In looking up some of this stuff, once I got sidetracked, I'm looking at blogs. Like, they're supposed to be humorous and funny. About, oh, this must be old hat to all you out there, and you must all, and they start talking all these zeros and maths and this thing and that old, and they kept putting on these weird, I mean, I had no idea. I really, it was like, that's another world, but these are people, and this is what they do. And they can do it for funny, cute things, and they can do it for not so funny, cute things. So I am going to talk about the fact that we have the capacity to have that circuit, that our hand is connected, where we can't take it away. Now, we have free will, so that's a little different. So we can choose to say, I am walking away from the circuit, but it's not going to work. We need to tap into that. We need to tap into the unknown, because we're being fed the known continually. Someone, good, bad, indifferent, knows your brain thinks this way. Period. We know how your brain thinks. It's easy. You know, it's not that difficult. Now, the little nuances about it and how it works that way and what little chemicals, and it's always a surprise. There's always something, just like you probably saw there's a new organ called the mesentery. Well, the mesentery, everyone knew the mesentery was there. It's like forms this like apron that protects your around where your organs are kind of stuck to. But it's just, you know, you kind of could guess that's not just a stagnant piece of grandma's old tapestry. That's a living organ and it has function. We just didn't know exactly what that function was before. So we're always learning. We're always looking. So we are going to talk about that, about surrendering and how surrendering does actually give you power and what it's like and what it's like in your own homes and relationships. But this is important because I tell you that, yeah, I'm getting off on this weird sidetrack and it's only for crazy intense mathematicians, of which I'm not, and it's too weird to talk about. No, the reason that it's really getting me and it got me way back with Pandora is because it affects you and affects your families. It affects your children. It affects my children, affects my grandchildren, it affects me. It affects all your friends. It affects what you eat, what you wear, what you like, what you don't like, what you think history is. How you feel about the history that never was, that is now, because it's been created. All history is like that anyway. Why do you think it's so easy to say, hey, all that history was a lie? Look, here's all these things we just found out about somebody 200 years ago. So that all, oh, that old history is a lie. Well, what about this history? It's so that all of a sudden it's the truth. History books are written to tell a story, and the story they might want to tell a certain group of people. Journalism used to be facts. It's not facts now. So anyway, this is not just a rant on, oh my gosh, look at the world. This is important. Now, to kind of retool you a little bit back, I'm going to first tell you why or how it is important and how malleable your brain is. And then I'm going to tell you a little bit about the algorithmic. And then we're going to get into the more ethereal things about you and how you can stop those repeated behaviors that you're not happy with, that don't seem to get, they don't further your relationships, your girlfriend, boyfriend, your love relationships. You find yourself a new person. Yay, a new person. And you are the same person with that new person. Maybe a little tweak here and there. But if you think you're going to be different, you aren't. That doesn't mean stay with someone who you can't stay with for whatever reason and don't tolerate the things that are intolerable. But it does mean that for you, It's your job on this earth to be uniquely you for everyone else and for yourself, but then to have your unique part of the body of Christ. You just can't have to do that. You have to be the functioning piece. You have to be. And if you aren't, it just helps the rest of the body be sick. And that's not good. So part of this is to see how these puzzle pieces do fit together. So what I want to tell you is just quickly how that brain does work. You go to church. I'm not going to do that because actually in the church I go to sometimes, I love my church, but the music isn't so hot. I'm at this church in this town, and it is a beautiful old church built in the 1800s, huge choir loft. And the pastor there had the taste, the good fortune, and the brain to say, I want the best. I want the best at my masses. And so they hired many professional musicians and choir and singers, and it was just always so incredibly beautiful. The soprano was like listening to the voice of God. It was just unbelievable, consistently, and packed one day in church, packed, and a father was looking straight ahead into the onto the altar. I was standing right behind them, and this little baby could hardly even hold its head up. It was so tiny, like a couple months old. And we're just there doing mass. And all of a sudden the organ starts up and the whole orchestra, the whole choir with organ and violins and the voices. And it just started up in a wellstream of a beautiful ancient hymn, a beautiful. And I don't, when I say ancient, it might've been like a Mozart or a Bach or something, or a Handel, but it was just beautiful. And this baby who could not even hold its head up, its little brow furrowed, its little eyes went up, and it tried in its little hard way, wiggle way, to strain its neck, because the baby was looking back toward the choir over the dad's shoulder. That child was learning music. That child's brain was being manipulated by music, manipulated in a good way. That child is a living, breathing example of someone who does not speak, who probably can't see very well, and has no frame of reference, and has no ability to synthesize or get, or never studied a thing of music, can't figure out language yet, can't even hold his head up. And yet the whole body struggled with muscles that never worked before, and struggled to raise its face, his little face or her little face up, struggled to, where is that coming from? What is that? Wow, this is awesome. It was bioelectrical, but it was being filled with beauty, just like you can live on grubs, but chances are if you're living in the United States, you're not going to start feeding your baby grubs. Not going to happen. Not that it's bad, just some people do eat grubs, but the point is that we don't just stop being that baby. So keep that in mind about you and your children. Look at them differently, not as little machines, but as very malleable. Thank God we are, because we get to change. We get to discover. We're going to talk a little bit about that on the other side of the break. And then we're going to go into surrendering for a better, happier, and actually more powerful life. I am Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. hope you got your coffee and your donuts and your, or your greens, your kale. By the way, since I'm on a diversionary rant today, I discovered through my daughter-in-law a way to make kale chips. And believe me, at this point, I don't want to hear the word kale one more time, but they're really, really good. So you just take kale and you wash it, put a little olive oil on them, and you put them on a cookie sheet, and you put them at low, bake them in the oven. I don't know. I think it was like 250 or something like that. And you just kind of watch them until they get crispy. And it works. It just works. And you can put a little salt on them if you want, or you can put salt and pepper. You can put whatever. So you who like kale and greens, I mean, who doesn't like greens? And it's a great way for your kids too. So you can get those packages where they're almost chip, like potato chip size. You don't substitute them for, nothing substitutes for potato chip, but they really are good. And they come out crispy and you have this giant bowl full of kale chips. So anyway, that's my little house tip. That's about as good as I get. So back to this idea of why it's important to understand, at least you don't have to understand what any of this means. Like I said, I logged on to find out what some blogger who was just doing a little light thing like we do when we blog. But it made no sense to me. I could not decipher it because it wasn't my language. Mathematics is a language. And some scientist somewhere, I don't remember who, said mathematics is the language of God, because everything from music down to an atom, a molecule, a universe, it all can be described mathematically, which is so weird. Anyway, I am ranting about many things today, because I want you to wake up. I want to wake up. I do it. And the thing is we have to, we are living with it. If you're on Facebook today, you've got so many varied algorithms out there working on you this second. It would blow your mind. If you're on Twitter, if you do Instagram, if you log on to a YouTube, if you Google socks, running socks, baby socks, men's dress socks, you're already in an algorithm. A huge, enormous algorithm that will start working very fast within a split second and will spit out at some point in your future on any place you happen to be. Even if your location services are off, doesn't matter. No matter what you do, it will find you. And whether you log on to your email, whether you have to go find the number of your insurance company because you just got in a fender bender, no matter what is going on in your life, the algorithms are never ceasing. So, what is an algorithm? An algorithm, if you look at the origin of the word, which I always love to do, it actually comes from a Latin word named after a 9th century Persian mathematician. So the Latin word is algorithmus. And then it's combined with a Greek word, arithmos, meaning number. So it wasn't really even used. That was the 9th century Persian is where the name started, the name came from. And the Greek. So it wasn't until how many centuries later, the 1200s, Chaucer in 1391 was one of the first people to use it. But I think 1230, in English, it was first used in about 1230. So this was something that was happening. Now, what is a algorithm? An algorithm is, well, and Wikipedia has an informal definition, which I don't really care for that much, but a set of rules that precisely defines a sequence of operations. A set of rules that precisely defines a sequence of operations. So in the medical world, back before computers, when I went to medical school, and now it's just like amazing, we had algorithms. It's very nice and easy so that if someone comes in with a sore throat, it's like sore throat. That's the main thing, main entry, sore throat. And then it's gray patches on the throat. And then you go, if that's a yes, it funnels you to these other possibilities. And then if there's a yes over there, it funnels you to 20,000 other possibilities until finally you are down to an actual algorithmic help. It's supposed to be a help, not the end all be all, as to what most likely this is. Anywhere from, oh, probably nothing, send them home and have them go to bed for 2 days and drink juice, to might be leukemia. Get this, and this test. So that's what algorithmics are all about. They take the first thing, and then from there, they just branch it out and branch it out, and they keep eliminating possibilities until they get the desired thing that they were looking for in the big picture. So you've got this giant, maybe 5-6 pages of all these little boxes and arrows and boxes and arrows. And if this didn't happen, then that happens. And if you don't do this, then do that, and on and on and on and on. But when you look at it all, person has sore throat, bottom line, what is it? So for you, human being with money or voting rights or potential, mostly money, it's going to be somehow you're going to be a consumer, or we need to have a collective consciousness going in this direction. How do we do that? Well, we start looking at their first choice, human being, Joan Smith, if you're Joan Smith, I'm just making up that name, Joan Smith. And then the next thing is men's dress socks. We already know pretty much she's got a man in her life that needs dress socks. So she's probably of a certain socioeconomic class. And so then it keeps going on and on and on and on. So this is something that we need to think about. So I'm going to tell you now this article today from IO9, which is a website, it's a blog site that says, we come from the future. So this is, this was written a couple of years ago, the 10 algorithms that dominate our world. Now, I just want to tell you what this person said. It's George Dvorsky. The importance of algorithms in our lives today cannot be overstated. This is a science website. They are used virtually everywhere, from financial institutions to dating sites. But some algorithms shape and control our world more than others, and these 10 are the most significant. Just a quick refresher before we get started. Though there's no formal definition, computer scientists describe algorithms as a set of rules. Oh, I just told you. As a set of rules that define a sequence of operations. He must have looked at Wikipedia too, or maybe he wrote it. There's a series of instructions that tell a computer how it's supposed to solve a problem or achieve a certain goal. A good way to think of algorithms is by visualizing a flow chart. So here are the 10. Number one, Google. There was a time not too long ago when search engines battled it for internet supremacy, but along came Google and its innovative PageRank algorithm. Today, Google accounts for 67.7% of the U.S. market share in core search. Then it tells you whatever it's followed by. PageRank works in conjunction with automated programs called spiders or crawlers and a large index of keywords and their locations. The algorithm works by evaluating the number and quality of links to a page to get a rough estimate of how important the website is. Okay, the basic idea is that the more important or worthwhile websites are likely to receive important and worthwhile websites are likely to receive more links from other websites. It's basically a popularity contest. In addition to this, the PageRank algorithm considers the frequency and location of keywords within a web page and how long the web page has existed. Okay, now, number two, Facebook's newsfeed. Now, we've all heard about that in the news. This is a 3-year-old article. As much as we may be loath to admit it, the Facebook newsfeed is where most of us love to waste our time. And unless your preferences are set and show all the activities, updates of all your friends in chronological order, you're viewing a predetermined selection of items that Facebook's algorithms have chosen for you. To calculate which content is most interesting, it considers several factors, such as the number of comments, who posted the story, yes, there's an internal rank of popular people and those with whom you interact with the most, and what type of post it is, a photo, video, status, etc. Then number three, is the OkCupid dating matching. Online dating is now a $2 billion industry. With the growth of such sites as Match.com, eHarmony, OkCupid, the industry has expanded over 3.5% a year since 2008. All right. So they talk about not only do dating sites result in more successful marriages, so they say, they do an excellent job matching prospective couples based on their various preferences and tendencies, which is all done by algorithms. So again, you're being matched algorithmically. Now we're going to, on the way back, we're going to just finish the other few, but the NSA data collection, interpretation, and encryption. Also, you may also enjoy that comes with, whether it's Spotify, Amazon, Netflix, you know, based on your last, how much you watch such and such, Pandora, all those you may also enjoy. That's also is completely algorithmic choices chosen for you. All right. See you on the other side of the break. I am Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Okay, here we go. My little aside turned into my entire program, but I know it is a very important thing to grasp in the general. And I'm giving you all these little detailed specifics mainly because I want you to appreciate how ubiquitous it is, how it is ever present in every single part of your life that you may not understand. And you can say, oh yeah, you know, I can understand how the dating thing works. So I can understand in Amazon. Yes, I put in Disney's Frozen, and that's why I'm getting all these other things that somehow, as always, people who like this, like that. Well, that may be true, may not be true. It's all algorithmic. But the problem is that the same with everything known to man. Anything out there can be used on anything. I'm going to give you a quick example. 30 years ago, read an article in a newspaper about putting cameras. I mean, can you imagine a world without cameras? Well, there was a world without cameras not too long ago. And the article was about putting cameras in some of the really dangerous gang areas of major city like New York. And it was only in the areas where they knew that gang members congregated at night. And my first thought then, long before I was a psychiatrist, was, well, that's a sham. And the reason it is because, or a scam too, it's a sham and a scam, because they're giving you the idea of, I thought myself, how long is it going to be until there are cameras everywhere? Because the general population reading the newspaper separates itself from gang members, because most of you aren't true gang members. Maybe some of you were or partial, but the true gang area, it's like that's something that's never going to touch your world, so you think. So yeah, hey, it's good because I might get stuck down someplace with a gang in a gang neighborhood and it's good they're going to have cameras. No, it was a way to get them already in, and then they expand. And sure enough, they're everywhere, obviously. And some of the things that you do see where they do help catch people, which is awesome. But some of the things that you do see, you know, you think, well, where is that camera? You know, out in some odd, obscure place. So we're taught, we talked, you know, before the break that matching the dating algorithms, that there's evidence to show that these things came, they come up and they get a good match. Well, that may or may not be true. May or may not be true, because just as soon as they come up with something like that, or that works, there's all, you know what catfishing is and all that. I know a priest that was catfished before he became a priest on a Catholic dating site. So, you know, you gotta be careful, people, and understand this does make a difference, because it's all down to who you might like. And then we'll just, it's like, oh, I know her. She likes, she Googled camping equipment and then went to Amazon and looked for a cold weather, sleeping bag. So that little bit of information is already stored. It gets pulled so that it goes over to your dating site or to your insurance site or to any site, and it gets fit into another algorithm. So she must like this kind of guy, or he must like that kind of girl. So it's a very, very big deal. Now, NASA, increasingly, he says, we are being watched not by people, but by algorithms. Thanks to Edward Snowden, we know the National Security Agency, NSA, and its international partners have been spying on millions upon millions of unsuspecting citizens. Leaked documents have revealed the existence of numerous surveillance programs jointly operated by the Five Eyes, I didn't know there were Five Eyes. The intelligence alliance comprised of the U.S., Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom. Together, they've been monitoring our phone calls, emails, webcam images, and geographical locations. And by they, I mean their algorithms. There's far too much data for humans to collect and interpret. So people can make fun of you and say, oh, well, yeah, you think some little man's back there? Doesn't need to be a little man back there collecting stuff. It's an algorithm that tracks you. Interestingly, the NSA claims they're not actually collecting our data. According to a 1982 procedures manual, information shall be considered as collected only when it has been received for use by an employee. Okay. So, but the reality is, it says it's not collecting, but it is. And then he goes on to talk about the problems that computer algorithms are intimately tied to people. And when we think of computer algorithms surveilling us or analyzing our personal data, we need to think about the people behind those algorithms, whether or not anyone actually looks at our data. The very fact that they even could makes it surveillance. All right. So I want you to, you know, just be aware, because this is affecting your children. Your children are already tracked. So that's kind of, you know, now we have to learn to be wise as serpents. Now, number five, this is the one I started with. You may also enjoy site and services like Amazon, Netflix, and of course, all the other ones I mentioned before. All the streams, all the suggested related items are based on our habits. Like any automated response, it's a ubiquitous feature of the 21st century, and there's pros and cons. Can be extremely helpful to receive recommendations and also spectacularly way off mark, particularly after purchasing a children's book as a gift for your three-year-old daughter. Indeed, along with PageRank and Facebook's newsfeed, these algorithms are creating a filter bubble, a phenomena in which users become separated from information that disagrees with their viewpoints. See what I'm saying? You have no chance, and your children have no chance for discovery, getting new opinions and new thoughts. This could result in what Eli Pariser calls information determinism, where our previous internet browsing habits determined our future. They are now determining what we like, what we don't like, and who we are. Now, Google AdWords, same kind of thing. It's a whole other algorithm. Stock trading, he mentions MP3 compression, compressing audio files. That actually gives you an enormous amount of data on a very tiny, tiny thing. So it's good, but it also can be worse. Now, then he goes down to IBM's Crush. This one doesn't dominate our world yet, but it could. Increasing number of police departments are utilizing new technology known as predictive analysis. This dates way back, but it works through a combination of data aggregation, statistical analysis, and of course, cutting edge algorithms. It actually is proactive. And what it does is this: in the future, These systems will largely take over the work of analysts. Criminals will be tracked by sophisticated algorithms that monitor internet activity, GPS, personal digital assistants, biosignatures, and all communications in real time. Unmanned aerial vehicles will increasingly be used to track potential offenders, to predict intent through their body movements and their visual cues. All right. And then they go on for something more fun called auto-tune, which is like a lot of the voices that you hear. And again, what will this do to your child? They said they think the first time this was ever used was when Cher of Sunny, that old Cher, sang the song Believed. It was the first pop song to feature auto-tuning, where all the systems around you electronically fit and tune and change and morph to your voice, so that when your child is hearing someone who is not standing right in front of them, they get an unusual and an impossible image to mimic. So you see, there's ways. This isn't an end of the world problem that I'm trying to alert you to. What it has to do with is today, on your knees, a moment of silence. Religious scholars all over the world are taking their days and saying, I'm going to have a clean day away from any kind of internet. If you can do that, great. If you can't do that, you can't do that. But one, become aware. Two, surrender that you're powerless over to this avalanche, this tsunami. You're powerless in some respects. If you're able then to turn your eyes toward your knowledge, your self-protection in the way that you can, and not put your head in the sand. Don't think that that's a problem. I would say, and I'd be very safe in saying, 9 out of 10 people that I talk to about, I talk to people about this kind of stuff all the time, don't think there's a problem. And the younger they get, the more that there is no problem, because they've never had a world without it. And you sound hysterical, like a hysterical end timer. But the reality is, this doesn't signal the end times necessarily, but it does signal a mass control. All the mass control back in Egypt, all the mass control back in Russia, all the mass control back in, even anytime you want to look at mass control of a huge population of people, they didn't have computers. They did it in the way that works. Well, this is our way that works, but you have to be aware. Be aware. Be aware. Just for this moment, surrender to God and say, I need more of you. So you move my feet. You help me navigate through this avalanche. This is where I live right now. So it's about surrendering to get yourself more equipped, more awake, more aware, more alive, more spiritual, more connected, and therefore more protective of yourself, your family, your friends, and your community. I am Dr. Michelle. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.